What is every boy's dream? To be plunged bodily into high adventure, to be plucked from everyday life and dropped into a seat of the pants existence with danger at every turn. And of course, there must be pirates. Bloodthirsty, murderous sea dogs, filthy as bilge water and treacherous with gold fever. For me, this is the essence of Treasure Island. Jim Hawkins could be any boy on the planet. He is no muscle-bound superhero. He is an ordinary lad who finds himself in an extraordinary situation. In the reader's mind, he is Jim Hawkins. At least he could be. It's just possible. I know that for 8 hours in 1977, I was Jim Hawkins. I remember approaching the book with great reluctance. After all, it's a classic, and teachers were always pushing classics at us. And if you read a classic without objection, that would be just the same as admitting that teachers could occasionally be right. And surely that couldn't be true, could it? Somehow, Treasure Island penetrated my defences, and I began to read. Within pages, and quite against my will, I was completely immersed in Robbie Louis Stevenson's world of danger and intrigue. I clearly remember being so worried about Jim Hawkins' immediate future that I actually left a sweaty handprint on my school desk. Of course, when the teacher asked me if I liked Treasure Island, I just shrugged and said, "It's okay, I suppose." Even then, you could tell I was going to be a writer. So now, Jim is not alone on the Hispaniola. We are along for the ride with him. And we stay there by his side, inside his head, until the last page. We hide inside the apple barrel together, overhearing the pirate's plan. We fall under Long John Silver's spell, and finally, we triumph on Treasure Island. It is a breathless journey and the closest thing to a real pirate adventure we can experience without an eye patch and a time machine. Treasure Island makes us believe that adventure is not only possible, but probable. Every old man we see could be the one to hand up a treasure map and spark off a whirlwind adventure. Reading Treasure Island again as a writer, Stevenson's characters make me grind my teeth jealously, which is not an attractive sight. Just think, Jim Hawkins, Billy Bones, Ben Gunn, and of course Long John Silver are all in the same book. Most writers would get a trilogy from such a wealth of characters. Who hasn't heard of Long John Silver? As a teacher, I only had to mention the name in passing, and half the boys in my class would whack the fellow beside them, cackling, "Arr, Jim lad." But my personal favourite character is Pew, the blind beggar. Was there ever a moment in popular fiction more sublimely terrifying than when the beggar taps his way down the dark road, ever closer to the spot where Jim Hawkins is hiding? Don't try too hard to visualise that, you'll have nightmares. In Treasure Island, Robert Louis Stevenson set the tone for a million pale imitations. The old phrase, "oft imitated, never bettered," is very apt in this case. How many wannabe Treasure Islands have we read? How many diluted facsimiles have we seen on the movie screen? Of course, there will never be another Treasure Island. It is a unique work of genius, and to date, I have met at least a dozen respected writers who claim it as their favourite adventure story. Counting me, that's 13. I wanted to write an introduction to Treasure Island because it has always been one of my favourites. It's one of those books that resonates with you for years after you have read it, and that you feel you have to go back periodically to read it again to confirm that it was just as good as you thought it was going to be. I think as an adventure story, it is peerless. It encapsulates everything that the modern take on pirate adventures is supposed to be. It has it all in there. It has betrayal, murder, treasure, everything. And a cast of characters that are quirky, lovable, rogues. There's such a great collection of characters in Treasure Island, and they have become synonymous with adventure stories. Long John Silver, of course, as soon as you say the name, everybody knows pirate. Jim Hawkins is almost another way of saying a plucky young hero, a young Jim Hawkins type character. So it's been held up as the archetype. And in this case, deservedly so. It's a classic story and one that has never been bettered. Simply because it is the best, or I think one of the best stories ever written in this particular genre. It is just a fantastic, amazing pirate story. and it has been imitated, it has been adapted, it has been done. Treasure Island in space, Treasure Island in the future, Treasure Island in the past. It has been done as a cartoon, sequels written. But at the center of it all, when you strip away all the cartoon characters and all the hoo-ha, you just have this fantastically readable, accessible, enjoyable story about an era that is gone, but somehow is brought back to life by Robert Louis Stevenson. I think it's very important for kids today to read classics because they are just wonderful stories. Sometimes the very word classics puts kids off a little bit, but these books are classics for a reason. They don't just endure. Nothing will endure just because people try and make it endure. It endures because of its own value and worth. Treasure Island is a fantastic story, and every year you read book quotes and it says a modern classic, an instant classic, a new classic. And very often these books are not classics, and in 20 years' time, no one will remember them. But Treasure Island has endured since the last century because it is just a wonderful book. No one ever says, yeah, read Treasure Island, didn't really like it, bit slow, a bit stodgy. Everybody loves it, and that's why it's a classic. I've been influenced by many classic stories. Treasure Island is one, obviously. I think possibly Peter Pan is the one that I would look to and say, when I start reading the character of Captain Hook, I knew we had a new kind of villain here, and I was really, really influenced by this. A villain with layers that wasn't just kind of evil for evil's sake. This guy had a past, he had phobias, he had problems, he had class issues. You kind of learned a lot about society just from reading about this character. And also Huckleberry Finn was another one. You had another lovable rogue. And from reading Peter Pan and Huckleberry Finn, I started to develop my own ideas about anti-heroes, which eventually led to Artemis Fowl. I think there are a lot of modern children's books that will become classics and that will survive the test of time. Possibly Melvyn Burgess' Blood Tide and Blood Song, I think they will be seen as classics in the future. Also Junk by Melvyn probably will. I think the book Holes by Lou Sacker and Milkweed by Jerry Spinelli, I think those two will be considered classics, and they kind of already are. It's a great time to be a reader, to be a young reader, because there's a wealth of fantastic books that are readily available to you, and those are just a few of them. I think some children's writers will have to adapt over the next 20 years to keep children interested in reading. Others won't. It all depends on what you're writing about. If you're writing in you know, historical novels, then that's fine. You can write in the style of Treasure Island or Peter Pan. Kids will always be interested in the past. If you're writing modern novels, you'll have to obviously make an attempt to connect to the modern children and reference stuff from their culture, like technology, computers, mobile phones, whatever the music they're listening to. I suppose that's why there's always a place for young writers who are not very far removed from the people they're writing about, and it's easier for them to connect. For the rest of us, we have to make the effort to try and stay current in certain areas. Maybe this is why I enjoy writing historical fiction, because I can just relax and be the old person that I am. But good did come of the apple barrel, as you shall hear. For if it had not been for that, we should have had no note of warning and might all have perished by the hand of treachery. This was how it came about. We had run up the trades to get the wind of the island we were after. I am not allowed to be more plain. And now we were running down for it with a bright lookout day and night. It was about the last day of our outward voyage, by the largest computations, sometime that night, or at latest before noon of the morrow, we should sight the Treasure Island. We were heading south-southwest and had a steady breeze abeam and a quiet sea. The Hispaniola rolled steadily, dipping her bowsprit low and then with a whiff of spray. All was drawing alone aloft. Everyone was in the bravest spirits because we were now so near an end of the first part of our adventure. Now, just after sundown, when all my work was over and I was on my way to my berth, it occurred to me that I should like an apple. I ran on deck. The watch was all forward, looking out for the island. The man at the helm was watching the luff of the sail and whistling away gently to himself. And that was the only sound, excepting the swish of the sea against the bows and around the sides of the ship. In I got bodily into the apple barrel and found there was scarce an apple left, but sitting down there in the dark, what with the sound of the waters and the rocking movement of the ship, I had either fallen asleep or was on the point of doing so, when a heavy man sat down with rather a clash close by. The barrel shook as he leaned his shoulders against it, and I was just about to jump up when the man began to speak. It was Silver's voice, and before I had heard a dozen words, I would not have shown myself for all the world, but lay there, trembling and listening, in the extreme of fear and curiosity. For from those dozen words, I understood that the lives of all the honest men aboard depended on me alone.
You've been listening to Owen Colfer bringing Treasure Island to life, a newly relaunched Puffin classic, available to buy at puffin.co.uk.